better immigration policy. Now, there could always be a disaster, but if we have a more straightforward and enforced immigration policy, then I think it's going to cut down on human deaths. But it's really nobody's necessarily fault, except the people that are these coyotes that are bringing in these individuals. Obviously, they don't care about human life. So in addition to that, Sean Spicer is out. And it was stated by Newt Gingrich that he did the very best job that he was capable of. I don't know if he was over his head. More likely, he was put in a position that somewhat impossible with this president. And the reason that I say that is because Donald Trump is his own spokesman. Donald Trump has the instincts. Donald Trump has the moves. And he is one of the most talented and controversial characters that we have ever seen in mainstream life. But part of that is his talent at being able to put forward his own message. So up against that, any spokesman is going to at some time look flat-footed. Now, I think Spicer did the best job he could. Now, he is going to move on to other achievements. He seems like a nice guy, and I think one of the most powerful things he said is, I'm not here to be anybody's friend. And so the person who takes his place is a gentleman that knows Trump better, Scaramucci, came from a very humble background, and he went to the Ivy League. So he's more in tune with Trump. But I think you've got to have somebody who knows Trump, who's got a little bit of heft, a little bit of gravitas, so he can push back against Trump and not have Trump get offended or write him off. But Trump himself said that Spicer was just a very fine person, and I'm sure he is. Now, although he was Rince Priebus's guy, so that's the side of the aisle, or the side of the president's arena that this guy came from. All right, here's a little bit more on the hot tragedy when these people were killed. And, you know, don't forget there's bodies that are found every day in Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, not as much here, but people who have come over the border trying to break in, and they don't make it because they die of the elements. But here's CBS News on the hot truck.
We're very fortunate that there weren't 38 of these people that were all locked inside a vehicle dead.
Human smuggling turns deadly. Undocumented immigrants are discovered crammed inside a hot semi-trailer overnight. And the death toll continues to rise. 9 people are confirmed dead, all of them adult men. The horrific discovery began after a desperate cry for help. San Antonio police say a Walmart employee called them after a victim asked for water. About 12:30 this morning, police found 38 people inside a semi-trailer outside the Walmart on I-35 and Highway 16 on the southwest side. Another person was found in a nearby wooded area. Eyewitness News reporter Sharon Coe joins us now with the latest. And Sharon, more victims are facing life-threatening injuries.
Yeah, Deborah, 30 people are in local hospitals. 17 of them are in life-threatening conditions. Temperatures last night were in the 90s, and temperatures in a vehicle can climb extremely quickly in a short amount of time. Well, 2 women who came by the Walmart to offer their condolences say it's terrible to know these victims suffered intensely.
Whether it's doubt, faith.
This is the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi.
Hope, whether it's darkness, light.
Gina Holly Blackfeather says these words give her peace in a time of pain.
Think about the suffering of these people, and at that point, you know, there's no room for anything else but mercy.
She's joined by Betty Gilbert to lay down gifts where the semi-trailer was discovered at the Walmart in southwest San Antonio.
In some way, I prayed. I just wanted to know that we care. We cared about them.
Around 12:30 this morning, authorities...
I really don't understand some of these people who go out and go out and read a prayer of St. Francis and and then have some lady come along and say these victims, I don't know if we cared enough for them. That seems to suggest that we did something wrong. And other than changing the policy of the United States, I don't know. You've got a situation where you have a very poor country with a great deal of human rights violations on our border. And it's always going to be attractive for these people to try to come here. And whether you call them illegals or undocumented persons doesn't really matter. The fact is they're coming in such a way that they have to sneak in, and the people who help sneak them in are not going to be good people. These coyotes are not good people, and they're not on a humanitarian mission. So we should be surprised that there's not more of this.
Discovered dozens of undocumented immigrants, men and women, ages 15 to 30, inside the hot trailer. 9 men died from heat-related illnesses.
Paramedics and firefighters found that each one of them had heart rates over about 130 beats per minute, which, again, they were very hot to the touch.
Federal agents say while 38 people were discovered inside the trailer, there may have been more than 100 packed inside. Police Chief William McManus says surveillance video showed vehicles picking up people from the semi.
Anybody who sees anything like this, people being transferred out of the back of a trailer, or people being transferred from some vehicle to another vehicle, then they need to call 911.
Hopefully people will stop trying to do this. It's hot. You know, yesterday was 104 degrees.
This investigation is now being led by the Department of Homeland Security.
But here's the thing. I mean, you can get into this as far as you want. I mean, the fact of the matter is there is now been put into the media, or from the media into the minds of a lot of people, that these people have a right to be here and therefore you shouldn't turn them in. So that is also in play in the last administration and people like Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi went down to the border and stood there and say, "Welcome, Americans. We welcome you, Americans," claiming that in the bizarre way that the last administration tried to play it out, that anybody who showed up on the border was an American and had a right to come in. So this puts out confusion as well, you know. So the number of crossings is way down, way, way down under Trump, which I think is good, especially during these hot times. But we still need to fix the policy. 6:15, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. We'll take a break. We'll listen to a little James Taylor this week. 523-1450. I do have my text machine with me.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Maybe just like a friend of mine, they hit me from behind. Guess I'm gone to Carolina in my mind.
All right, so let me get to some of your headlines here. And you've heard about the story that occurred in Texas with the man. That must have been like hell in there, huh? All these people just trapped in there and no way to get out, and it's getting hotter and hotter. Jared Kushner, son-in-law of Donald Trump, ready to detail 4 meetings that he had with Russians, and he says he has nothing to hide because there was no collusion. I'm sure Kathy has something to say about that. Gas prices falling to 12-year low under Trump. OPEC grappling with growing threats. The bottom line here is that you've got a market that can no longer be controlled by one country or one group of countries, because so many other countries have come online in terms of delivering petroleum, natural gas, oil. We just had a 1 billion barrel fine down off of Mexico. So, and Mexico just opened up the its country for exploration, and you've already found that much. So there is, unlike the claim of the far left that we've reached peak oil and we're losing oil and we will pretty soon have to switch over to other forms of energy, that's not true. There's a lot more green energy, windmills and solar. In addition, the age of fracking is here, and so there is no such thing as a statement or summary of how much oil there is in the ground, by the way. It has to do with how much oil is theoretically there versus the technology that you have. So drilling a well is one way to bring oil to the surface and gas. Fracking is a different way. And a conventional well next to fracking and slant drilling. So as technology increases and becomes more sophisticated, the amount of oil becomes larger. The amount of oil, and some of these classic oil fields, you only got out 5 or 10% of the oil that was in there. And now we can go back to previously exhausted fields and renew them with various technologies. So anyway, there is, as far as I can tell, never going to be a time when we run out of oil on the earth, besides the fact that they don't even know where oil comes from. The most popular theory is that oil comes from the plants and animals that used to live that were turned into, under high pressure, go from biological material into petroleum or related. But there is a volcano on Triton, which is, I believe, a moon of Venus. It is a cryovolcano, and it is constantly pumping out a frozen material, and that's why it's called a cryovolcano. What material is it pumping out? Methane. And we don't have any reason to believe that there was ever life on that planet. So abiotic oil without biological material is, in theory, out there. All right. Let's see, more headlines for you. Chainsaw-wielding attacker injures five in Switzerland street, a rampage. I thought only in America stuff like that happened. A little girl cured of HIV after a cocktail of drugs. Los Angeles Police Department cadet scandal, sex, joyrides, and car chases, just like in Police Academy. Venezuelan opposition is ginning up more and more resistance to the failed, as a matter of fact, let's get into that this week, into the failed leadership of that socialist country. Remember, socialism always leads to repression, economic failure, and death. And that's what's happening over there. They don't even have enough money to buy medicine for their people. So you could die of something that's highly curable. Breakfast big to lose weight. That's the latest study. And all right, looking for anything else you might find interesting. All right, so Elena Del Rey trying witchcraft against Trump. How many Trump idiots are out there? How many people who used to be intelligent until Trump came along and then turned out into raging morons? So many. All right, here's a little from Spice Man, the Spicer that left the government and probably feeling better already.
The outgoing White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Sean, I guess after tonight, you're probably going to be one happy guy. I'm just guessing.
Well, it's been an honor and a privilege to serve this president in this country. I will never be able to thank the president enough for what he has been able to allow me to do. And I had a great opportunity to have some tremendous folks on a team here that worked tirelessly to promote the president's agenda. I'm leaving it in capable hands with both Anthony and Sarah Sanders, who has been just a tremendous partner and will continue to do the president in this country a great job.
All right, walk us through what happened. And from what I understand and all the reports are, the president did not want you to go. Tell us what happened.
He didn't. He's been very gracious throughout this process. He wanted to bring some new folks in to help rev up the communications operation. And after reflection, my decision was to recommend to the president that I give Anthony and Sarah a clean slate to start from so that they can talk about the president's agenda and help move it forward. And he, after some back and forth, understood that the offer that I was making was something that was in the best interest of this administration. I thanked him for the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to watching Anthony and Sarah do a tremendous job.
All right, walk us through that to the extent that you can share the conversation. You went in and you said you want to give them a clean slate. So, you know, give us a little of the back and forth between you and the president today in the Oval Office.
Well, Sean, I will say this. I've never revealed private conversations that, that have been privy to the president. I will say,
well,
as I mentioned a moment.
As I mentioned, you're on your way out. You might as well,
you're right.
Right.
You know what? You're right. I'm on my way out. Why not? But as I said, I went into the president after we had the discussion early with Anthony and Sarah about what the president's desires were. And I said, sir, I've had the opportunity to think about this. I think it is in the best interest of this administration and your presidency that I give these two individuals the opportunity to operate without me in the way so that they have a fresh start, that I'm not lurking over them. And I think that's in the best interest of the organization, of this administration, and of his presidency. And so, there was a bit of a back and forth. He's an unbelievably gracious individual and wanted to make sure that I thought that that was in the best interest of myself as well. He's always thinking of others. And I assured him that I would be just fine. He assured me that he would continue to be as supportive as he always has been. And I told him I would stay on for a few weeks to ensure a smooth transition. He accepted that. And then we kept working hard to advance his agenda.
Did you feel in any way that your role had been diminished? I mean, you started sharing the podium with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Anthony Scaramucci comes in. Did you feel in any way that this was against you? Did you feel you were pushed out in any way, or this was just totally your decision?
No, but as you mentioned, the president obviously wanted to add to the team more than anything. I just think it was in the best interest of our communications department, of our press organization, to not have too many cooks in the kitchen. And so I think that's a good quality. They need the team here that works so hard, so tirelessly to advance the president's agenda, need clear leadership. And I thought it would be a bit confusing having additional people at the top. And so I wanted to move on to give both Anthony and Sarah that clear lane in each of their respective areas. But look, we've been working tirelessly trying to advance this agenda. There's a lot of people here doing a lot of amazing work on the digital side, on our research side, on our press operation regionally. We had a very successful Made in America week this week, garnering over millions of impressions throughout the country of the amazing things that products that are coming from around the country and that the president's working hard to keep and grow the manufacturing base and the job base around this country. So there is so much to be done, and we've got two additionally talented people that will continue to lead this effort forward.
Let me ask you about, from your perspective, being on that podium, and I've known Tony Snow, Ari Fleischer, our own Dana Perino. From your perspective, being up there, the state of the media, we have this fake news. We've had phony stories. They get advanced. They blow up. Russia obsession. What is your assessment now, 6 months and a day, deciding to step down of the media?
I think most people aren't really privy to how stories are developed and what stories are make it to the front page or to the mainstream media, whether it's in print or in broadcast. And I think they'd be shocked and disappointed to see some of the bias that exists in some of the stories that don't get told or the manner in which they are told. I was increasingly disappointed in how so many of the members here of the media do their job, or rather don't do their job, the bias to which they come from it at. And as I mentioned a while ago, I think that there's become a very clickbait mentality among a lot of reporters where they're more interested in their clip or their click than they are about the truth and the facts.
You know, and this is very interesting to me because I've seen,
I'm going to take a break here because we have local news, but I think it's poignant. There was something about Spicer that I liked that was kind of, to me, an echo of Trump. I'm not here to make friends. He did the best that he could. I thought he was good, or he picks up something from the White House as a fact, and he gets up and states it, and then the president contradicts him because the president says, I have a better way to say that, or according to some of his critics, the president stretches the truth or changes the fact. Whatever he does that really sets off the opposition in his personal style, the representative, the person who gets up as a spokesman, has got to be able to weather that. And I think it's an exceptionally, it's a hard job to begin with Trump. It might be an impossible job, but that doesn't mean that you don't put somebody good in there and put them to work. But it might be impossible, but necessary. And I think that it would be, I mean, I'd love to try to do a job like that. It would be hair raising. It would be, and I'm sure just dealing with the president, infuriating, upsetting, but ultimately rewarding, in thinking that you're trying to kind of move the ball down the floor or down the field in terms of helping the country recover from some of these grave assaults against the national body politic, against our country, and some of the terrible ideas that were brought in and normalized by the last administration. Is President Trump perfect? Everybody knows that he's not, but in his style is exciting, but it's also dangerous for anybody who would try to be a spokesman. So, I mean, anyway, good luck to Scaramucci. But anyway, we'll take a break for news. 523-1450-805-6180, and be back in a moment.
Karen, she's the silver sun. You best walk her away and watch it shine. Watch her watch the morning come. A silver tear appearing now. I'm crying, ain't I? Gone to Carolina in my mind.
All right, so we've had some crazy weather out there, and if you go to East Mesa weather, somebody set up a little weather station online. So which is covers our area. I think I've got too many windows open, which is why it is a little bit slow. So it rained today, storm total 20.25. And so that was after midnight, I guess. So there was, where I'm at, there was a couple of downpours, and they both came down pretty hard. The first one was like almost being on the ocean, though. The wind came down and was blowing everything sideways. A lot of wind and a lot of rain. So I'm looking at Coco Ross has a collection of individual weather stations. And there was an incredible amount that came down in Hatch, and it was something like, and this is, so this is the next day. This is the next day, so it doesn't have necessarily the amounts from yesterday, but let's see if I can get it, though. All right, so I just updated it to yesterday, and there was something like 3 inches, 2.5, 3 inches up in Hatch, but it must have been in my house. It was more. It felt like it was about a half of an inch because when it rained a couple of times, and it really came down when it rained. So, all right, and I do have a little story here. I'm just hoping that this whole computer didn't come crashing down because I had so many pages open, but there's a story here in West El Paso. A lady was on the road and there was a lot of water coming down. And so the next thing she knew, the road had collapsed. It was a sinkhole and her car was in, I think it was tail first. So I'll get that to come up. I guess I'm going to have to close some windows here, but. All right. So let me see here. But so anyway, I undoubtedly have more, trying to multitask here, more stuff to talk about in terms of rain. All right. I'm shutting down a few things here. So this should speed it up. Although, here we go. Yeah. Here's the sinkhole. If it plays, here's the sinkhole. But anyway, so they're, you know, neither El Paso nor Las Cruces is really designed for water on the ground. And, all right. So I do have a little bit about James Taylor as well, but here's your sinkhole. Please play. Here we go. It's funny how sometimes a video just freezes out of nowhere. All right, let's see here. All right, so El Paso, a woman in her automobile swallowed by a sinkhole in West El Paso after a storm drain collapsed under the road. And this is from yesterday. The driver said she was drove through the residential neighborhood to avoid driving through a flooded street and was making a U-turn at the intersection of Villa Hermosa and La Placita when the sinkhole opened up. Paul Cardenas, a fast food vendor, was standing, outside a nearby home when the sinkhole swallowed the car, much like a giant burrito. He and his other neighbors ran to help get the driver out of the car. Fortunately, she was not hurt and only got some minor scrapes on her arms as she crawled out of the window. She was too shaken to speak on camera, but grateful for those who pulled her out. Once Cardenas and neighbors pulled her out of the ground, the car sunk even further. So, all right, so this thing is not going to play, but that's what happened. And when you saw a picture of it, the car, the SUV was down below the ground like 5 feet. So that's a pretty big sinkhole. All right. And further down the line here, well, let's take another little break here and give you some weather for today. 523-1450.
There ain't no doubt.
805-6180 to text. I do have some history of James Taylor and the Beatles, believe it or not, in Apple Records.
Hey, baby, sky's on fire. I'm dying, ain't I? Gone to Carolina in my mind.
All right, so I thought I would just put a little, because I had listened to this in the last couple of weeks, and I thought it was kind of an interesting story. James Taylor, how did he get into the business? One of the great singer-songwriters of the 70s and 80s, 90s, James Taylor was married to, what's-her-face, Anticipation. And so how did he get in the business? Well, he was over in London hanging out. And ended up getting introduced to Apple Records. Here's a little bit from Oprah's master class, Oprah.
So I took my demo and I got it to Peter Asher. And Peter, as luck would have it, had just signed on as A&R person for Apple Records, the Beatles' brand new record label. And it was his job to find people to sign to the label. And he heard my demo. He arranged an audition with Paul McCartney and George Harrison. Paul said to Peter, this is great. You feel like producing a record for this guy? And Peter said, yeah, I'll produce him. And Peter Asher also was a a key person. You know, Peter was my manager, is my dear friend, and we sort of learned how to produce together. And that was it. That was my big break. And, you know, it came at the, after about 3 years of trying hard to get started, you know, it did seem like an impossible dream. You know, I mean, I was a huge Beatles fan. I emulated and stole from the Beatles. I copied them as much as I could. You know, it was a remarkable, just a dream come true. Really was. The Beatles were making the White Album at that time, that spring. They took a studio, booked a studio, and I used the time that they weren't using to record my album. Paul and George contributed on a couple of tracks, and we couldn't possibly have found a better big showbiz break for a musician like me. And it was great.
I mean, obviously, James Taylor, when he was big, was just absolutely gigantic. Here's a little bit on the story of Alva Records. This is might be a little hard to hear, but this is from the Beatles official channel. So most people have seen a Beatles record with the apple at the center of the disc.
This is London, the home of Apple. The Apple concept is to bring together the artists of today with the methods and media of tomorrow. To do this, Apple has entered into many diverse fields of communication. Films, television, and of course records are all part.
What is Apple?
It's a company we're setting up which involves records, films, electronics, which make records and films work. And what's it called? Manufacturing?
Yeah, it does a few things. Yeah.
You know, the byproducts that end up with Larry Page T-shirts. No.
It's just trying to mix business with enjoyment.
Pleasure.
Because we're in business, you know, we find ourselves in business.
Are you the directors of this?
Yeah. But like all the profits won't go into our pockets. It'll go to help people, but not like a charity.
We hope to make a thing that's free where people can just come and do and record and not have to ask, could we have another microphone in the studio, because we haven't had a hit yet. If you want it, here
it is, come and get it. So they helped Badfinger get into business. And here's just a little bit from James Taylor on Howard Stern.
Good time in North Carolina. You had your vocal cord cleaned up. You're living in London now.
Right.
And now a miracle happens. Cooch, your old buddy from the Academy, says to you.
What happened actually, Howard, was that I started playing my music wherever I could.
Right.
And some people who I met in London, who are sort of creative types, worked in broadcasting and in set design and stuff like that. They got enthusiastic about my stuff. And they said, James, you should go into a recording studio and make a demo.
Right.
Which in those days was before cassettes. So what it meant was a couple of copies of reel-to-reel tape and some actual acetate discs, these big, cut right on a lathe. I think 45 minutes in the studio in Soho and in London cost me like £20.
Right.
And I took that and gave it to these friends of that I'd met there who had promised to sort of play it around to people that they knew in the business and broadcasting at the same time I called back in the States and I said, you know, Danny, I'm trying to get something started over here. In the year preceding the Flying Machine, Danny had been with another band, same drummer, but another band called the King Bees. And the King Bees had backed Peter and Gordon on their English invasion tour of the United States. So I called, and Danny had told me a lot of stories about that.
This is about a 10-minute interview. We don't have any time to finish it, but I just wanted to give you a little background on James Taylor, a remarkable talent, and how the Beatles were instrumental. Well, you might argue, if not for the Beatles and opening Apple Records, that James Taylor would have never become prominent, although that's certainly possible. He could have been signed by somebody else, but right person, right time, and James Taylor became a superstar. It's kind of funny how things work. 6:53, Kelly O'Connell will take a little break.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Maybe just like a friend of mine to get me from.
And by the way, remember Blog Talk Radio, Kelly O'Connell, if you want to find the show there. It's simulcast. It's being simulcast right now. You can get a clip. You can get the entire show after the show. And then I've got a website, Kelly O Radio, which I'm going to set up should this show need to transition. Here is Jim Gaffigan on Why Summer Vacations Stink.
Remember last winter? I think we all still have emotional scars. Well, summer is finally here to wash away all those horrible memories. Can you believe it? Summer, the golden boy of seasons. Everyone loves summer. What's not to love? Sunny days, warm weather, and don't forget, it's not winter. Now, it may not come as a huge surprise to you that I don't hop on the summer bandwagon. I am pale and nobody wants to see me in shorts. Like most pudgy guys, I prefer light jacket weather. I like a place to put my keys and hide the fact I haven't worked out in 2 decades. I'm sure most of you love summer. It's like a 3-month vacation. Of course, this isn't true, but the perception of a summer holiday sure makes doing work during the summer feel like punishment. Summer does mean no school for my children. Hey, who doesn't deserve a 3-month break after a rigorous year of kindergarten? I don't know exactly what's good about my kids getting the summer off. My kids lounge around the apartment like they've returned from fighting ISIS with a constant, what are we going to do now, look on their faces. I already can't wait for the back-to-school commercials. Entertaining children is not the only summer pressure. The warm summer weather means pressure to do things outside. This is why I don't live in Southern California. Nice weather is like an assignment. Don't waste a day. Go lie on the beach and get skin cancer. I'm sure many of you think I'm being negative about your sacred summer. I'm just pale, pudgy, and lazy. But soon, you'll come over to my side. I see it every August. That's when we all start regretting the horrible things we said about winter. It's when we go from appreciating our air conditioner to treating it like our most prized employee. You okay there, air conditioner? I know you've been working hard lately, but tell you what, after Labor Day, it's all downhill. You're guaranteed a 7-month vacation. Please don't quit. Enjoy your summer, everyone. Don't worry. Winter's around the corner.
Jim Gaffigan, and I'll take you out with the aforementioned James Taylor, a superb talent as a writer and a performer, great friends with Carole King as well, and they've got some classic clips together. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text. Got my little text buddy right next to my heart. Great hanging out with you in the first hour. We'll be back.
And I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. Dark and silent late last night. I think I might have heard the highway call. Geese in flight, dogs bite. Signs it might be omens say I'm going, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. With a holy host of others standing around me.
Well, welcome back or good morning to you. If you're just joining, it is the 24th day of July. And let me get you your headlines off of Google News. I did not collude, Kushner says in prepared remarks to senators. Swiss chainsaw attack, 5 hurt in Schaffhausen. Well, of course, you know, it makes you wonder. I guess I'll have to do a little reporting on this in terms of playing a clip for you, because it makes you wonder, was there any chance that it was Muslim? attack. Or as we've been trained to say, a terrorist attack. And John McCain, there's more details out there for what he is suffering from. But I think the bottom line is, you know, if I was him, he might want to stay in the office till he literally cannot function. But you'd think he'd want a little more quality of life than hanging around the Senate if he's only got a year left or 2 years. But I think it seems to me the survival rate beyond 2 years is something like 5%. I mean, this is pretty much not just a death sentence, but it is, you know, I mean, it's this stuff is powerful. This type of cancer that he has is very fast acting. Now, they've got a picture of the guy that they're looking for in this German border town. He certainly doesn't look Muslim. He's got terrible posture, I'll tell you that. He looks a little downtrodden. Well, I'll try to find a clip for you later. All right, so some more headlines for you. German girl found in ISIS hideout reportedly wants to go home. Before she gets murdered. It seems like what they do is these Western girls show up and they're treated as wives, and as soon as they express any desire to leave, the women end up getting killed. So, and the USS Constitution Old Ironsides, after 2 years of work, is afloat once again. Looking for any news you can't live without here. Now, we've got the question of what is going on with healthcare right now, Obamacare. What is the latest on that? Let's try to dig that one up. But, no, I mean, it seems to me that trying to multitask. Hold on. By the way, I got a great story for you. It's only great in its embarrassing details, but let's see what I can find out for you. I lost my phone. I didn't know if somebody stole it. It was an iPhone, which I bought because I break every phone I ever get my hands on within a short period of time. And so I looked everywhere. So anyway, I'm sitting in my truck and I look at the dashboard and I suddenly realize there's this little place on the dash, underneath the dash, you know, like on the face of the, there's my phone, but I had already went out and bought another phone. So anyway, I just, very depressing. All right. Let me see here for a clip from Obamacare. I'm looking for the latest thing that's come out. All right, so here's a little statement from Trump from the AP archive, and this is from 16 hours ago, so less than a day. AP News.
Yes, sir.
Trump inside the Oval Office with Mike Pence and some of the other people, and Trump is the tallest person.
Thank you. Sit down, please. I don't think I said no, but I'm certainly disappointed. For 7 years, I've been hearing repeal and replace from Congress, and I've been hearing it loud and strong. And then when we finally get a chance to repeal and replace, they don't take advantage of it. So that's disappointing. So I'm I'm disappointed in what took place. It will go on and we'll win. We're going to win on taxes. We're going to win on infrastructure and lots of other things that we're doing. We've won and are winning the war, as you know, on the border. We're very much decimating ISIS. You can see that. You see that better than anybody sees it, the soldiers that are with us today. We've had a lot of victories, but we haven't had a victory in healthcare. And I think you'll also agree that I've been saying for a long time, let Obamacare fail, and then everybody's going to have to come together and fix it and come up with a new plan, and a plan that's really good for the people with much lower premiums, much lower costs, and much better protection. I've been saying that, Mike, I think you'll agree, for a long time. Let Obamacare fail. It'll be a lot easier. And I think we're probably in that position where we'll just let Obamacare fail. We're not going to own it. I'm not going to own it. I can tell you the Republicans are not going to own it. We'll let Obamacare fail, and then the Democrats are going to come to us, and they're going to say, how do we fix it? How do we fix it?
What do you think of that?
Well, they were not disloyal. They had their own reasons. I was very surprised when the two folks came out last night, because we thought they were in fairly good shape, but they did. And, you know, everybody has their own reason.
All right, here's a little bit. MSNBC is... Obamacare in a death spiral? Of course it is. What, I mean, you know, who could doubt that? What? Why is there so much chaos and problem in the healthcare sector? It's not because of Trump. He just showed up.
Obamacare is not in a death spiral. The health law's signal achievement has been to reduce the number of Americans who don't have health insurance. America's uninsured went from 49 million in 2010 to 28 million in 2016, in large part because of the individual mandate requiring all to get health coverage. Millions of America's poor who couldn't afford coverage, and millions more with illnesses who couldn't find an insurer to cover them, benefited. The vast majority of Americans, whether they're unemployed, employer plans, or Medicaid's expanded roles, are doing just fine or are better off under Obamacare. But a significant few are worse off. Health premiums have shot up more than expected, especially in the individual market, affecting 21 million people, which, by the way, represents just 7% of Americans with health insurance. An even smaller segment within the individual market, lower to middle income Americans who aren't poor enough to qualify for Medicaid, but make too much to receive insurance subsidies and aren't old enough for Medicare, have been crushed by Obamacare premiums. That doesn't make for a death spiral, but it's clear that Obamacare's insurance mandate isn't robust enough. The incentive for America's young and healthy to sign up and...
All right, so I don't want to listen to this guy anymore. The problem with Obamacare is that there is no incentive to get insurance while you're healthy. You can get insurance when you're sick. That's what pre-existing diseases or conditions is when they talk about that. And the fact of the matter is, you can't have insurance is gambling. You can't have a gambling situation where the game is rigged where the house lives. So anyway, we'll take a break here. It's got to be replaced. So do you agree, should Trump get something passed now before Obamacare fails, or you wait until it fails to prove to everybody that there was no other option? There's arguments for both sides. All right, we've got James Taylor and Carol King, one of his best friends. You've got a friend highly rated.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing, well, nothing is going right. Close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up, whoa, even your darkest night.
All right, here's a little bit more, because it's a little bit hard to follow this, but here's a little bit more from Senator Lankford on Fox with Maria Bartiromo. And so what's going on right now, and this is from yesterday on the healthcare, trying to get a vote, trying to get it repealed, trying to get something going on.
Welcome back. As we've been reporting, the race is on this weekend to rally up as many Senate Republicans as possible to get behind a new bill for a vote this week to repeal Obamacare. Senator James Lankford joins me right now. He is a member of the Appropriations Committee, also Intelligence and Homeland Security Committees. Senator, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good to see you as well.
Glad
to be with you.
Most people don't understand the Senate rules. They are complex in terms of the rules and governing. You wrote an op-ed about this, and I want to get right to it before we get the status check on that bill to repeal Obamacare. And you say the genesis of the frustration stems from the rules that provide a minority of senators the ability to grind the Senate to a complete halt. Well, that rings true this weekend, sir.
It certainly rings true. There have been two major proposals I've tried to lay out to try to modernize the rules of the Senate. I completely understand the Senate is built around this one thing that's very unique. The minority always has a voice, not in the House of Representatives, not in the White House, not in the Supreme Court, but in the Senate. It's the only place in the federal government the minority always has a voice. So I want to help protect that. But people don't know there's actually two filibuster votes, what's two called cloture votes, for every single bill that comes up, one at the beginning to get on it and another one at the end to get off of it. Well, I've said, get rid of the one at the beginning. The majority party should always be able to get on whatever bill they want to get on. If the minority's not heard, they won't let them get off the bill. Keep debating until they get it resolved. The other issue is about time. Right now, the Senate Democrats are blocking all the nominations coming up, not because they can lose the vote. They can't. Every one of these nominations is now 51, but they can drag them out to 30 hours of debate because we have 30 hours allotted if the minority chooses to have it. So we've only been able to get through a little over 50 nominations total of the more than 200 that we have. If the Democrats keep slow walking everything, demanding the 30 hours of debate for every single person, it'll be 11 years before President Trump gets his staff.
Incredible. Incredible. Look, I am all with you on this obstructionism coming on the left. I watch it every single day in terms of the left really trying hard to stop President Trump's agenda from getting executed. But I've also got to call out some of your colleagues on the right, Senator, because I am now truly asking the question, does the GOP truly want this president to be successful? With all of this division within the Senate and the division that we saw in the House in terms of getting a bill out to the floor for a vote, does the GOP want this president to succeed?
More than just to want the president to be successful, we want the nation to be successful. We understand things like Obamacare have major issues and major problems. In my state, rates went up 76% just in 1 year. Last year, we only have one insurance carrier in the state. So we understand what this means, not just for the president and his legacy, but for people at home and for the entire country. So,
I mean, that should be your response to these people who get up and say Obamacare hasn't failed. Obamacare is a failure. If the business model is a failure, you can't go on with it. You can let it run into the ground, but all right. So I'm going to switch gears here and got this weird thing that I ran into that I felt that I had to play this for you since you are, oh my gosh, one of the videos just disappeared. That is bizarre. I just looked at this puppy. Oh, no, here we go. All right. Okay. Here's a little history. Drive like a New Mexican.
48, we did several stories.
This is from KOB4.
This morning on that video that's going viral.
This is about 5 years ago.
Weird things that Albuquerqueans say. And it reminds me, I had a hit record on the radio back in the early 80s called Drive Like a New Mexican. It was done to the tune of the Egyptians. Walk like an Egyptian,
oh,
or the Bengals,
God,
walk like an
New
Egyptian.
Mexican. Yeah, but there's none of that.
Signal to turn left, then go right. New Mexicans think that's out of sight.
Wow.
Things like that. And then the refrain was, accelerate on yellow. So...
Please. He does
that. All right, so there's the background for you. I don't know who that guy is, but here's the song. The audio quality on this is appalling, but it probably adds to the experience.
Mexico. Signal to turn left and go right. New Mexicans think that's out of sight. Or maybe no one even knows you're there. Who needs those things? Call it like tonight. If the traffic's gone, just go around. Don't worry about knocking down a fence. When you have a wreck, you kind of know the other guy won't have insurance. Then you go and dream it's the hard way.
And don't forget,
accelerate on yellow. She lays real fast, then she's back without even looking in the mirror. Back traffic up for miles and miles by cruising through town and look here. The speed limit signs are not the law, they're just for decoration. Insurance rate, oh, hey, oh, the highest in the nation. All the cops in the donut shop say, hey, oh, hey, oh, oh. Driving like a Mexican.
Hi, Gary Carruthers. I promise to clean up the driving problems in the state, and believe me, I'm not just whistling Dixie.
Drunken drivers really think the judges in New Mexico are neat. Most times they know, oh, hey, all convictions go right back on the street. Some states we know they have a law that says you can't drive and drink. In New Mexico, most people feel that it's against the law to drive and think. Driving the highways a day or night will really scare any man alive. Turn on the radar detector, set cruise control at 95. Tailgate on the interstate, it's the only way to go. And always accelerate on yellow. Drive like a New Mexican.
I'll be careful on the way home now, huh?
All right, I just got a text. Steve Stucker, I guess that's his name. Steve Stucker, and he's the weather guy for KOB. All right, we'll get you some local news here. 727 fly in those friendly skies, 523-1450, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 805-618-02, text in. Be right back.
You just call out my name. Wherever I am, I'll come running.
All right, so there is a story about a strange signal that is coming out of a star 11 light years away. Here's a little bit on that.
Are they out there? The alien creatures in the movies are fictional, but can we find the real ones? We have never found life beyond Earth. Never. But there's a new way to search, one that the SETI Institute and you could make possible.
Did the aliens know we're here? There hasn't been enough time for our FM radio, our radar, our television to reach them, but they will know that there's oxygen in Earth's atmosphere. They will know that this planet is encrusted with biology.
That might be incentive enough for them to ping Earth with a signal to see if anyone's at home. And that signal could be the flash of a laser, which can be seen from light years away.
Powerful lasers for signaling could be built by any advanced society. They could use them to propel their spacecraft. And the thing is that brief flashes of light, shorter than the blink of an eye, could be in our skies right now, and we wouldn't know it.
The SETI experiments that look for brief light signals examine only one star system at a time.
That's like looking for a needle in a haystack using tweezers. But that's yesterday's technology. And there's a better way, a much better way.
I spent the last 2 years designing the ideal device for a practical all-sky survey. With novel optics and specialized processing, we can leverage off-the-shelf hardware to minimize cost while still being able to detect pulses shorter than a millisecond. With an array of these spread throughout the globe.
Well, believe it or not, it's not an ad for this contraption. Oh, it looks pretty weird. But so anyway, what is the signal that's coming out of this star that they've never heard before? I've got a couple of clips here, and hopefully one of them will have some information on it.
Strange radio signals have been spotted coming from the vicinity of a nearby star, but don't get your hopes up that aliens are responsible. On May 12th, the 1,000 foot-wide, 305 meters, Arecibo radio telescope in Puerto Rico detected some very peculiar signals apparently emanating from Ross 128, a red dwarf star that lies just 11 light years from Earth. The signals consisted of broadband quasi periodic non-polarized pulses with very strong dispersion-like features. Abel Mendez, director of the Planetary Habitability Laboratory at the University of Puerto Rico, wrote in a statement late last week. We believe that the signals are not local radio frequency interferences, RFI, since they're unique to Ross 128, and observations of other stars immediately before and after did not show anything similar, he added. The three leading explanations for the signals, Mendez wrote, are solar flare-like emissions from Ross 128, emissions from some other object in the same field of view in a burst of some sort from a satellite orbiting high above Earth. Each of these hypotheses has its issues.
Well, that's the basic theory. I don't know if getting into them will help clear it up at all, but this telescope in Puerto Rico is spectacular. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's the one that's laid in the ground up on top of a mountain. And it is a bowl that is nestled into these. It basically looks like almost like a volcanic. I'm sure it's not, but a volcanic area where they built this telescope, and then they have held above it suspended some equipment to help. To basically direct the signals that are coming in. So it's a gigantic telescope. It's very impressive. If you Google Puerto Rico telescope, it'll be sure to come right up. But so anyway, is there life out there? Or are we the only life in the universe? Well, who knows? We'll take a break for your weather, 523 1450 and 805 6180 text. And come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about a brand new gold rush in California.
To see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall. All you've got to do is call. I'll be there, yeah. Now you've got a friend.
Here is a new gold rush. If you're waiting to get rich and you want a get rich quick scheme, your dream may have showed up in California. Mini gold rush has descended on Northern California. This is from San Francisco Gate. When asking seasoned miners about this year's so-called gold rush in Northern California, it's hard to get the truth. People who are smart don't advertise what they've found, said Bob Van Camp, better known as Digger Bob. If you're finding nuggets in an area, you don't tell anybody about it. I made that mistake before. So you're looking for nuggets, you're not looking for flakes and dust, because those are milquetoast in comparison, according to this article. Now, with record rainfall, the rain rushes through, washes through these areas, loosens dirt and gold. So they're finding more flood gold this year than usual, says Diana Clayton, president of the Shasta Miners and Prospectors Association, who owns 7 claims throughout Northern California and has about 350 members. And she says many of our members have been mining for decades. They really know the area, and they know where it's changed. So Bryant Schock, co-owner of Gold Prospecting Adventures in Jamestown, California, estimates there's been a quarter increase in professional miners heading up north. That in and of itself proves there's more gold being found. Heavy rainfall triggers slides, and bigger chunks are unleashed and loosened, not just near streams and rivers, but at the end of these slides. And Clayton claims he's heard of people walking along, kicking the dirt and finding a nugget of gold. And one Shasta miner uncovered a nugget half the size of her pinky finger. So if you found a nugget like that, would you hang on to it? Would you have it put on a chain around your neck, or would you turn it in for the money? So aspiring miners should be careful, and before you put a pan in your hand and start going up to start panning for gold. But it is out there, and it is waiting to be found. Now, I have to switch gears here a little bit, a story on the new Cold War. Stephen F. Cohen says, forget Russiagate. Intelgate is the real scandal. Someone in CIA is running an operation, an attempted coup against Trump. Check this out.
Yeah, you talk about the people that...
Did we listen to this already? Seems like we did. Let me hear it.
Rats and others rely on for information on the subject. I think it's worth calling attention to a comment that James Clapper made recently on Meet the Press. James Clapper was speaking of Russians, and Clapper said, quote, typically that they are almost genetically driven to co-opt, penetrate, and gain favor. So that's James Clapper, the person who is sought after as an authority on these issues, demonstrating that his mindset is one of attributing inborn qualities to Russians that make them somehow inherently disposed to carry out spycraft or subterfuge or what have you. And you have to assume that the mindset that Clapper exemplified there is shared within elements of the intelligence community, which he essentially headed. And it's this intelligence community who are behind many of the anti-Russia leaks that we've been seeing, and which are then seized upon by Democrats as the unadulterated truth. And there's so little skepticism of motive that's applied, and so little cognizance that, you know, people who might have a pre-existing commitment to a hostile posture toward Russia are overseeing this campaign on the part of Democrats who really ought to know better, you would hope.
So let me play poker with you and call you and tell you things are even worse, but then step back a bit. What Clapper said about Russians, that they're genetically disposed to do us in and be evildoers, is, of course, a form, I guess, of racism. I mean, like saying, you know, Jews are genetically disposed to cheat you financially, and blacks are this, and the Irish are that. This is something that we wouldn't tolerate. And nobody protested. I think he said it on NBC or someplace.
He said it on Meet the Press. So he said it on the flagship television show that, you know, the establishment kind of organized
right.
themselves
and,
around.
And by the way, he had said it in Australia 2 days before. That's where I first heard him say it. So it wasn't an accident. But let's step back a minute. And you're right. Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I think that there has been an intelligence operation run against Trump surreptitiously, going back at least since early 2016, and that I would call it Intelgate. And it's that, not Russiagate, that really rivals Watergate and needs to be investigated. What these intelligence services have been doing, in addition to breaking the law, with this pattern of secret surveillance and leaking to the press for months and months. So you're right. Who are these people that have sat, I guess, through most of the Obama administration and only now departed and who have run our intelligence services? So we know that Clapper is a Russophobe. He thinks that they are genetically evil people. But look what Brennan said in his testimony. He was the director of the CIA. He said something absolutely astonishing, but it's good we now know it. He said, and I can't quote him exactly, but I do not misparaphrase him. He said, Americans who have contacts with Russians have a risk of heading down a treasonous path that they are not aware of until they commit treason. Stop and think about that. This is a guy who was downright paranoid about unofficial contacts with Russia. Now, he might have told me 50 years ago when I started my career, because I've had, I don't know, scores, hundreds of contacts with Russians over my life of all kind. That's what I do. I try to make contact with knowledgeable Russians and sometimes just with Russians who are a lot of fun. But imagine saying that. That was the director of the CIA. And then we have Comey's astonishing testimony where he comes forward and says he's a great authority on Russia and he knows they hacked this. He knows they'll be back. But then he admits he's been one of the leakers. So we have these three top intelligence essentially outing themselves. And the strange thing is nobody pays a mind to what they said, except to a certain extent, Comey's leaking. But that was okay because it was against Trump. But my back away is that when I was teaching at Princeton, I had a number of very, very good students at the undergraduate or master's level, and even a couple at the PhD level, who didn't want to be academics. They wanted to go to work for the CIA because they didn't want to kill anybody or spy on anybody, but the CIA had a unit on Russia, and it may still have it, though who knows. They did nothing but research. These young people, if they got the job, sat in the CIA in Langley or someplace, doing exactly what I did, studying, like scholars, Russia, but they had some declassified material. And back in those days, occasionally, I would actually be invited to join one of their seminars, and we have a discussion. I wrote an article once that they adopted as a kind of test model about reformers and conservatives in the Soviet political elite. So these people in the agency were good people, intelligent people. They could have been professors at American universities, which reminds us, the intelligence services are highly factionalized. There's no the FBI, the CIA. There are rival factions at the top in there, warring with each other, and they have been throughout my lifetime. One of them, for example, sold President Kennedy on the Bay of Pigs adventure, which was a disaster, while another warned against it. I think what we've been seeing for the last year is an element, but a powerful element, at the top of the agencies, particularly the FBI and the CIA, less so the national security agencies, waging a kind of surreptitious campaign against Trump and his, quote, associates, and leaking. But I wouldn't say that all these agencies are tainted by this behavior. I think this was a leadership group. Now they're out. But some of their adherents evidently are still there because the leaks continue.
And one of the things that was leaked is that this gentleman, Jeff Sessions, had talked to an ambassador about the campaign, which he said he had not done. Isn't that interesting? So they're trying to destroy Trump from internal leaks. I don't think it's going to happen. 750 will come back. And I've got something from Jordan Peterson you might find notable. Peterson on the Western apologists of Marxism.
In the 1920s, it's after World War I, Russia's in pretty bad shape. The villages are full of brutalized men who have post-traumatic stress disorder and lots of people who are not doing well at all. And the bloody intellectuals come into the town and they say, you know those successful farmers up the street that you've always been pretty jealous about in your useless manner? Well, they're actually pigs and demons who are stealing from you, so why don't you come out, we'll form a nice little mob and we'll take everything they've got. And that's exactly what happened. And all those people were killed or raped or set off to Siberia in the middle of the bloody winter where there wasn't even anything for them to anywhere for them to live or anything for them to eat. So they all died. And then the consequence of that was a few years later, 6 million people starved to death in the Ukraine. And Malcolm Muggeridge had been reporting on that since the 1930s. And so that was the first wind, really, that the West got of exactly what was happening in the Soviet Union. But even at that point, the bloody left-wing intellectuals in North America were so damn clueless, and in Europe, that they never paid much attention to it, with the exception of certain number of people like George Orwell, who wrote 1984 and Animal Farm, which is, of course, a discussion. The main pig in Animal Farm is Stalin, of course, and it's a story, an allegory about the Russian Revolution, whose basic motif is we're all equal, but of course all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. And that's the motif of Animal Farm. So there had been warnings all the way through, right from the beginning of the Russian Revolution, to the West about exactly what was going on. But because communist and Marxist ideology is very good at addling the weak minds of idiot intellectuals, there was a huge section of the population who was fomenting, I suppose, against the standard, what would you call it, political, psychological, and social order, who were absolutely committed to, you know, the ethic that's encased in statements like from each according to his ability to each according to his need, which sounds perfectly wonderful if you think about it for about 15 seconds, but if you think about it for 6 months, becomes unbelievably murderous in its reach and intent. And so anyways, the French, for whatever reason, seem to be particularly opaque to reason. I'll give you an example. So the doctrine of Pol Pot in Cambodia that also killed about 6 million people. So what they did in Cambodia once the revolution occurred was decide that everyone in the city were parasites on the countryside, because the countryside full of farmers was where the primary production was taking place. And they regarded the city dwellers as parasites on that fundamental production. So they basically emptied out the cities and sent all the people in the cities out to work in the country as forced labor. And 6 million people died there. And the chief architect of that bloody project got his PhD from the Sorbonne and said exactly what he was going to do when he went back to Cambodia, was cheered along by the French intellectuals who thought that was just a fine idea. So that's all background for why I don't think any of you guys really know much about 20th century history. So anyways, what happened in the 1970s when Solzhenitsyn published The Gulag Archipelago was that it was so brilliant, the book, and so overwhelming in its emotional and intellectual and historical power that it became impossible for anyone to continue to claim that Marxism/communism had any intellectual or ethical integrity whatsoever. It was done. It was done. And that's part of the reason why he won the Nobel Prize. And part of the reason, by the way, why the Soviet Union collapsed, because once word got out about exactly what was actually going on, there was no way of making a coherent argument in favor of, say, exporting the workers' revolution around the world. It's like the consequence of that was well documented by Solzhenitsyn. You see, and the Western intellectuals tried to make excuses for what had happened in the Soviet Union by blaming it on Stalin's cult of personality, perversion of the original accurate Marxist doctrine. So they basically said, well, Lenin lived, because he died quite young and was replaced by Stalin, had Lenin lived, the promised utopia would have been delivered. But Solzhenitsyn, being an absolute genius, documented the relationship, number one, between the axioms of Marxist and communist thought and the laws that were generated primarily by Lenin, and the construction of these camps and the dekulakization and all the mass murders. He documented the causal relationship between them and laid them clearly at the feet, not of Stalin, but of Lenin. And so that was also a major blow, because it undermined the remaining argument of the left-wing, radical left-wing apologists in the West for the viability of Marxist/communist doctrines. And you still hear people today, many people, when they're faced with the, you know,
they always say real Marxism has never been tried, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Here's Jim McGaffigan. He sees himself as a Kardashian.
Episode
episodes are very, you know, we strive to make them very personal and very unique. So therefore, there's no episode where like, oh, we lost a pair of shoes. These are all stories that come from my life. And, you know, Jeannie is my wife, so she knows the point of view of the wife character.
Now, this is a strip club.
Oh, I am so glad you're not the kind of guy that goes into places like this.
Damn!
There are some episodes that I think concern TV Land, but I think some of our more popular episodes from last year, they were a little reluctant initially, too. But what's good about our relationship is they're like, look, if you want to die on your own sword, go ahead. There is plenty of discussions that we have.
He's actually talking about the fact that his wife and his children were in his TV show, and he's wondering what difference there is between he and the Kardashians.
Where I was like, no, that's not. It has to be bigger. It has to be more interesting. Like last season, we did this Bible episode.
You're my 10-year-old brother's favorite comedian.
And people were like, so you do during season one. And I'm like, yeah, I don't